so in terms of how he writes. And I think that album has actually strengthened his material with Geese. 3D Country is a fantastic album. I've listened to it to death.
Yeah. We used to play Cowboy Nudes on the morning show all the time.
Such a great song. But like, it was clear to me from the first single, like Taxes. As soon as Taxes came out, I was like, oh, doing a solo album made him a better musician.
Something's different from the last couple of records.
Yeah. Production wise, or just maybe he feels more in his element, or he's just really hitting a groove. And credit where credit's due, it's obviously not just him, but something had improved, and pretty much every subsequent single, I felt the same way.
Yeah.
And listening to the album on a whole, I think he's really gotten his lyricism down. He's got these great motifs that are going through the album. There's lots of talk about being a sailor on Opaí to Cocaine that ends up coming back in Bow Down and vice versa. And yeah, it's, you know, I would say 3D Country is a great album. And I'm not even sure I would say Getting Killed is better, but I would say it's more cohesive.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a little bit of maybe growing up on the album as well. Like 2021 was when Projector came out, right? Mm-hmm. And they would have been, what, 17, 18 at the time?
19, I think.
So they were like really young when they started. And when Projector...
They formed in high school, I think.
They formed in high school. Yeah. And I think the whole plan was that they were going to split up.
Yeah.
But the band started to take off.
Yeah, I know. And I think they had one guitar player leave to go to university. And that's why he sings and plays at the same time now, which credit where credit is due. It's not an easy thing to do, especially with like the kind of songs that they have under their belt.
Yeah, that's true. But then it was almost this like few years long journey of them going from being, you know, one of the many post-punk bands to come out of lockdown when everyone was suddenly like going back and, you know, not that this is necessarily indie sleaze, but there were a lot of bands coming out around that time. Like I would have at the time put them in with bands like Courting, like Fontaine's DC, like Shame, maybe even some of them like Idols and all of that, bands that were just, you know, post-punk was coming back.
Yeah.
This sort of indie sleaze thing was coming back.
I would even say
back.
Black Country New Road.
Black Country New Road. Yeah. But then since then, it's like, as they've gone on, they've somehow, like, there've been a few bands that have been able to step up from that post-punk label. It's a difficult one, like Yard Act and bands have talked about it too. Once you get stuck in that label, people expect a certain sound, a certain style, a certain kind of theme in your music as well. And then it's really difficult to break out of that.
Yeah.
But some of these bands have taken it in very different directions. So when Geese went for 3D Country, it was kind of bringing back a little bit of alt country before that became a popular thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say, and this is kind of only become more obvious to me in time, but Geese, Winter and the rest of Geese have always had like soul influences as well. Like even down to, they put out a live EP a couple years ago, and just the amount of like soul singer backing vocals on that. And you know, it's toned down a little bit on Getting Killed, but it's still very prevalent. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I feel like every band that people were calling post-punk and like the future of guitar-based music like 5 years ago, they're all doing something else now.
That's true.
In a way, Geese are kind of like, I don't want to say like one of the last bastions of that, because a lot of the bands you mentioned are still like alive and kicking, but I would say of all those bands, they've probably changed the least.
Yeah, maybe.
At least they've moved away.
They've come back a little.
Yeah, they've moved away from guitar stuff the least, is what I would maybe say. Like, we never got like a synth heavy Geese project, or suddenly there's like a string arrangement or any of that. And not that those are bad things, obviously. I mean, I love when musicians change gears, especially when like post-punk, and I'm saying that in quotes, when post-punk musicians change gears. I mean, to bring back Black Country New Road, going from For the First Time to Anthem Up There. I mean,
with lineup changes.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me started about that. But yeah, that's just a great transition. And so, you know, I think to go back to Getting Killed, initially it felt kind of samey to me. Like I felt like, oh, all these songs kind of sound the same. And in a way, that's because they didn't experiment with the instrumentation as much as I expected them to.
Yeah, it's not like they suddenly have dance influences, or like you said, they have synths. But it's always interesting to see how musicians distinguish themselves after coming out of that like little bubble of a certain kind of music.
Yeah.
And they did that, you feel, I think so too, by experimenting more lyrically, or just like becoming a better band,
yeah,
generally.
Oh, better musicians, yeah. And, you know, we were talking about 3D Country being a country album or like alt country. I would say they almost pushed, I say this with like gritted teeth because it's like a band of white kids from New York, but they're pushing the funk thing a little bit. Like at least on Bow Down,
yeah,
in particular, I can really hear it in that one, like just that like kind of chunky guitar.
Yeah, it's like walking that line between being a punky band and doing that in a kind of like Gang of Four way,
yeah,
to almost pushing funk. But there was a lot of hype about this show. Like for whatever reason, it's been growing. It was Winter's solo album that came out. It was the album announcement. It was like you were saying, Taxes and a couple of songs that were really kind of starting to get people's attention.
Trinidad. Oh my God, Trinidad. Yeah.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about later. Because we do have to talk about
that song. Yeah, for sure.
But and then there was, just before the tour properly kicked off, there was that Jimmy Kimmel performance at exactly the time when everyone was paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really good luck. They're kind of having their moment where all the stars are aligning in their favor. Mm-hmm. And this happens to lots of bands.
But this isn't accidental. Like,
yeah.
They moved... Just before this album came out, they moved publishing to like a bigger this thing. So this was the album they're kind of aiming for to be their big break in some ways.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been working. So as we go into this show, we're just painting a little bit of a picture and setting the scene for the show. We go into it. It's heavily sold out. What were some of the resale tickets that we saw look like?
Yeah, I mean, who knows if anyone actually buys these, but the first one I got sent was like 40,000, and the last one I saw was like 300,000. And those are like average to significantly above average yearly salaries.
Yeah.
I mean, not that anybody's buying them, mm-hmm. obviously, but clearly the demand is at least perceived to be there.
Yeah, and even if like, I think those might be taking the piss just a little bit. But I think the actual tickets that I saw on Ticketmaster for day off resale, which is usually when they drop because they're hoping to get rid of them, were still like $1,000.
Yeah, so, I was seeing four digits.
Yeah.
That was somehow the most reasonable number that I saw, which I think is very telling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a smaller venue than it should have been for a band with this much hype, but that always happens when you book a tour before you get big,
yeah,
before the album drops. So it was at the Opera House in Toronto, 900 people. It felt like everybody was going to be there. Like, you know, there are some shows when you come out of the show in the next couple of days, you will see absolutely everyone posting about having been there. So this was one of those you had to be there kind of shows.
Yeah.
And I remember before Geese walked on stage, there was a guy standing behind me who was talking to someone else. And I overheard this. He said, "This is going to be a big moment." He said, "This is going to be like seeing the Strokes at the Horseshoe Tavern in 2001.
Yeah.
They're never going to do a venue this small again.
Oh, there'll be history next time.
The next time, it's going to be history. So that's what we have going into this. All this is the hype before the band even come on stage. So then let's start talking about the show so we can maybe just like give people a bit of a heads up almost. We can play one song that will be maybe played at the show. And then we'll come back and talk more, like give you a full show review. So it was my first time seeing Geese.
Mine as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought
you'd made it to the last one.
No. I wish I had. Their last show, I think, was opening for King Gizzard at like Budweiser. But before that, they were somewhere better than this. But I can't remember where. The first time they came to Toronto, they played at the Garrison for like 15 people.
Yeah, I bet.
Which is, I feel like, the thing that happens.
Yeah.
And you hear about that kind of thing and you put your head in your hands and you're like, ah, if only I was with the Pulse sooner. But yeah, no, you could... This was my first time seeing Geese.
What were your first impressions? Because, like, you've heard so much about them.
Yeah.
And they're...
spent a lot of time listening to their music.
Yeah. And they also seem like the sort of band that aren't necessarily, like, you know... They seem slightly introverted and all of that. Mm-hmm. They're not the sort of people who are, like, online and posting about themselves very often. So there's still a little bit of that, like, band mystique.
Yeah.
And just kind of weeks before the show, they were in the UK, or they were on Six Music anyway, and they were doing an interview. And I guess the Strokes comparisons do persist in the sense that I remember their interviewer, Nick Grimshaw, was talking about interviewing them and, you know, how they were as people and all of that. And there was a kind of, like, he described it as a kind of, this is not a negative word, tiredness, a kind of like New York a New Yorker tiredness to it. There's this kind of
a
just
deep
like
sadness in the eyes.
Yeah, in the voice as well. And like, you know, they're very self-deprecating. They don't necessarily talk very much and all of that. So I feel like if anything, in this case, it works. It might be the sort of thing that gets you kicked out of retail, but it is going to be the sort of thing that, you know, builds this mystique as a band. You still, you can listen to all the songs. You can sort of know everything that's, or hope to know everything that's going on inside their heads, but you don't really know what you expect when they come out on stage. So when they came out, when they walked out at the Opera House, it was like unassuming kind of crew neck t-shirt sort of thing. They come out looking fairly normal. And
yeah, no one was kind of dressed to the nines or anything.
No. And then they get crazy on the bongos.
That was amazing. Yeah, they opened with Islands of Man, which would not have been my first choice, but it worked really well. They started very dark. You know, they had the lights rising, which was a little scary for me from my photo perspective, because I'm like, oh God, am I going to have enough light for this? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It's a very sort of like mid-tempo, slow kind of opening way to open. And so my first thought was, genuinely my first thought was, dear God, Cameron Winter is very tall. And he's very skinny.
He's like 5 feet tall.
Yeah. And he's a very tall, very skinny man. You know, and he cuts, they kind of all cut very sort of iconic figures. Like they have very sort of distinct shapes to them, which is funny because, you know, I feel like other people with long, greasy hair like that don't really have the same presence. But once they got going...
You're getting a bit of Julian Casablancas.
I was going to say, yeah. I was going to say, once they start going, that's pretty much where the Julian Casablancas comparisons stop.
Yeah.
You know, when they're performing, they're all so into it. And they're all like a well-oiled machine. Like you can tell they have spent, you know, the better part of their youth practicing just being one kind of entity. And it's really pulled off for them because it was so seamless. Cameron is very charismatic when he was talking. I mean, when you can tell what
when
he's
he
saying.
When he wants to be.
Yeah, when he wants to be. He can turn on the charm. You know, they had moments where they were like tuning up or changing guitars or anything, but you kind of didn't really notice because, you know, even though the conversation was kind of kept to a minimum, there was just such a good flow to it.
And I think Toronto tends to be a chatty crowd.
Yeah.
So people were shouting out stuff.
Well, because everybody wants
to... You could call it heckling.
Yeah.
Everyone wants their viral
Everybody
moment.
Wants to be the person who gets talked about on Twitter. So, you know, I kind of established a little bit. They opened with Islands of Man, and Islands of Man is like a slow kind of build up. And, you know, I was thinking that's kind of like a strange one to open with, because it's not that it's a bad song or anything, but it is very much one of those songs kind of near the back to middle half
moment.
Of the record. Yeah, exactly. But it sort of, you know, it has this sort of like building presence in the structure and like how the drums come in and they kind of speed up a little bit. And I think literally you kind of could kind of watch Cameron and Emily kind of rise up from the ground as they were setting their guitar pedals and sort of come into this presence as the guitar is kind of locked in a little bit more.
Okay.
And then they played 100 Horses. Dear God, to go from that kind of like building structure of Islands of Man immediately into 100 Horses was just insane. Like I felt like my hair was being blown back off my skull. They played it with such a like, not that it was ever a downbeat song, but they played it with so much more energy live than I was expecting, that was the point where I was like, okay, not only do these guys kind of sound like they did on the record, they actually probably sound better.
Yeah.
And I had some friends kind of echo this suggestion. As far as the actual mixing and presentation of the show goes, they could have mixed Cameron louder. I have no other notes. This was probably one of the best sounding shows I've seen in Toronto in a long, long time. This is the first show in a long time I haven't had to pop my ears like 30 times. It just sounded good. It sounded loud. It had a great presence to it. And 100 Horses was a great way to prove that presence.
And I was thinking, just watching the performance of that song, that they almost seem like they could be a, you know, kind of a jam band, a prog band. But then there's that songwriting that goes on top of it that just gives them that extra standout edge. So we'll listen to the song and then we'll come back and talk about the rest of the show, because my God, we've got more to talk about.
Oh, absolutely.
You introduce it.
There's 100 Horses. We'll be right back.
listened to a bit of Geese. That was their song 100 Horses, and that's from their new album that's just come out, Getting Killed. And the reason we're talking about them, because, you know, they are a band from New York City, but the reason we're talking about them is because Owen, who's joining me on the show right now.
I'm waving, you can't see it.
Yeah, yeah, the wonder of audio. We went and we saw Geese, and we were very impressed by it. So, and we've got thoughts on that show. So we're going to tell you all about it. We were talking about the song 100 Horses, and that's why we played it for you. It was like kind of early on in their set. And this was obviously for anyone who's joining us later on and is still kind of lost by what we're doing. It was a very, very anticipated show. This sort of has been one of the indie shows of this summer. And there have been a few of those that people have been like, you have to be at this show in 2025. And we're going to look back on as like, defining breakthrough moments, breakthrough tours and stuff. This is definitely one of them in the sort of getting bigger in the indie world. They got the crowd going. I don't think the crowd was still or dead at any point. And they have some moments where like things really build up. Like they've got the slower jam kind of moments. They've got the moments where Cameron Winter apparently doesn't like the comparison, but he does sound a lot like Rufus Wainwright.
He really sounds like Rufus Wainwright.
And he does the same sort of like almost warbling thing. You know, it's a bit of like Rufus Wainwright over something like Broken Social Scene to an extent, but also
it's
maybe
like putting
a little
wah-wah
bit
over
off.
Your voice mm-hmm. while you're doing an instrumental breakdown.
Oh yeah, there's a bit of Mogwai in there as well. Like, it's kind of post-punk in the sense that it's not like twinkly or pretty or anything in a lot of places. No. It's still a bit of a mosher. Like, I saw people full-on moshing in there.
Oh, he had people opening up the pit
for slow
21,
songs.
22. Yeah. Yeah, and also, like, Getting Killed, I think, is when they started doing that stuff.
Yeah.
I would say, like, Getting Killed, 21, 22, Rain Dance, like, the crowd really brought it for those songs. And that's what they wanted you to do. Like, we were basically eating out of the palm of his hand.
Oh, yeah. He was doing one long note, and the whole crowd's, like, cheering, screaming.
Oh, yeah.
They were there to be impressed. Like, we have to say about the crowd, they came to be impressed. So, you know, it's not like they had a crowd that they had to win over. That's kind of what the hype does for you. But
this is such a cliche thing to say, but I feel like I saw less phones than normal.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Like, there was just more people in the pit.
Yeah.
Less people like talking, less people going for a drink.
Everybody felt very engaged to me.
And also I feel like despite how seemingly introverted the band are, there's also this like willingness to push themselves out there. Because if you just saw the way their stage was set up, Cameron was basically on the lip of the stage. Like his
mic is really close.
If he tapped his mic a bit forward, it would fall off the stage. So he was right in the front. He kept like reaching out to the audience as well.
From where I was I was lucky enough to be in the photo pit for the first three songs. And I probably could have gotten a whiff of him if I
you
wanted.
You were right under
his
notes.
Was quite close to him. And if you're able to track down the photos I took of the gig, like you can see that firsthand. Like there was maybe
they'll be on the, three on the or four feet, goes with this.
3 or 4 feet from me and him.
Then they bring out the stuff from 3D Country and from Projector, and that's kind of their post-punk era, if you want to call it that. And that just adds to it all. Like those are their harder, faster songs. That's when the energy really just comes back into the show. And I just feel like the contrast that they have between some of the slower songs and then just going for these heavier, harder, faster songs, they're able to pace their show really well.
Absolutely.
It keeps the crowd going. They're already really like enthused and energized and everything. And I feel like everything that's happening in the crowd maybe gives them the ability to take a step back as well. Like they don't have to be the people chatting to the crowd all the time because their music kind of does the talking.
Yeah. You know, maybe because Geese are young or maybe because they're Gen Z, they managed to avoid the Toronto curse for the most mm-hmm. part and probably gave one of the better Toronto crowds I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some kind of insufferability when we were waiting, but that's kind of to be expected. And I thought all things considered, it was pretty tame. Exactly.
That becomes one of your, you know, your darlings are getting bigger. You just have to deal with it moments.
Yeah. And but, like, you're going to a Geese show. People are going to say weird things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's the Black Midi effect. But I actually do want to touch on that Gen Z thing as well, because like they had little moments of doing almost like call and response things. Like there were points where it did feel like, oh, this is like Gen Z Freddie Mercury stuff going on.
Yeah.
Not to compare him vocally or in, you know, in terms of stage presence or any such thing, because I feel like they have different stage presences. But the concept of a call and response, the concept of connecting to the crowd, and the way he's just like standing very close to the audience as well. And then from there, it becomes its own thing, right? It like descends into this screaming. And there's, you know, it's just about a certain kind of Gen Z spontaneity.
And everybody joined in on the screaming,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely. But we're not even talking about the song that's about the screaming yet. I'm literally only just talking about Taxes. And then just, you know, it's almost surreal when you watch him just like slowly and very kind of like calmly singing about like, you know, doctor, kill yourself and stuff like that. But it's quite a moment. But it was, I think, the moment they won the show from, they really won me over, if they hadn't already done that, was when they came out for their encore. Like, that's one that I really want to talk about. Because they come out, it's like Cameron comes, sits down on the stage, right? If you're at the back, I don't even know if you can actually see him, but he's out there.
He's pretty like, tall.
Head in his hands. No, he's, because he's like down on stage.
I'm saying even
slouching.
When he's sat down, he's taller than half the people there.
Probably. But he's there like head in his hands, like just
pull
going
the mic
through
stand
it.
Down. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like almost you're going to get like those kind of sit down commune performances.
Yeah.
But there's 900 people watching and it still somehow feels really intimate. And, you know, that's kind of their slower moment where it's mostly just all eyes on him and stuff.
Yeah, they did a stripped down version of one of their numbers from 3D Country. And it started with just him and the keyboard player. And eventually they all came in. And it was just such a great kind of slow rise, kind of very similar to what they did with Islands of Man. And sort of looking at the structure of the encore, you can tell these guys are kind of with the pulse because they basically structured their encore like a shorter show.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I saw Geese at like a tiny festival or something, or just somewhere where I was only going to see Geese do three songs, and they did those three songs.
Aspect.
Yeah, exactly. I would have been decently happy with that lineup that they did, and then they closed with Trinidad.
Yeah. Now that song, like it's the album opener. You kind of, if you're the sort of person that puts on albums, you find that you get most familiar with maybe the first four songs of the album, because if you ever have to, like, if you're traveling somewhere and you put it on, or if you're doing something,
you just don't get to finish.
You don't get to finish it, but you will always have heard those first four songs like 15 times, or as many ever times as you attempt to finish the album, which you will do if you're going to a show and you're the sort of completist person as I am.
Trying
and
to like, cram. You
know, yeah. 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 Trying to get a good grade in Geese. But yeah, so like I'd heard that song many times.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more distractedly than when the band's in front of you. But I almost didn't realize just what that build-up's going to sound like when 900 people are out there screaming with you.
Yeah.
There's a bomb in my car.
Yeah.
The crowd was going, you know, crazy. They were crowd surfing. And it's just, there's something about screaming together lyrics with 900 people that it kind of becomes like the Poznan wave, the cigarettes and alcohol keys.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just sticking with the Oasis thing. And that's like, those are the moments that stick out for you. Like, if you'd never known Geese before this and you went in, it's easy enough to pick up that refrain at some point. And you know, Cameron's teasing it before and going like, oh, you know, I'll tell you what's in my car. Just give me a second. I need to like drop this tuning to drop D or whatever. Which again, very
Geese
thing
to do. You can know what's in my car once I drop my tuning. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very Geese thing to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it just completely kicks off. And that's where they ended it. Like, you would think
such
that
a crazy note to close with.
Yeah, because you've got the energy going. You'd want to maybe like push it forward for a few songs, take this one up a little, maybe bring it up to just before the encore.
But as a counterpoint, where do you even go after Trinidad?
Where do you go from that?
Right? Like the energy is there. It's such an amazing highlight to walk out of. Everybody walking away from that show is going to be talking about that song.
Yeah.
And talking about how they performed that song.
That's one of the moments of 2025. I think we can say that. Owen, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Where can
people find your stuff?
So,
because we should say, you joined me as a photographer for this show.
I did.
So if people go on the Yellowbrick Road Instagram, they should see like a lot of the photos that you got from the show. And all the others are really cool as well. So you should just plug your Instagram.
Yeah, I'm a local photographer in Toronto. I'm Owen_Forbes with a 0 on Instagram.
But we're going to leave you with Geese. Thanks so much for listening to us yapping. This is Trinidad on TFRC Radio.
To the Freedom Principle, Canada's longest-running community program featuring new releases of the African diaspora in the emerging genre of world jazz. This program is produced in the town of LaSalle, Ontario, at the 42nd parallel, 8 kilometers south of Detroit, Michigan. The Freedom Principle can be heard across Canada from the Salish Sea of British Columbia to the Grand Banks of the Atlantic Ocean, and we are honored to be on this excellent community radio station. Stay tuned for some great new releases.
Mm-hmm.
we just experienced Lagendorf United, a Swedish collective led by saxophonist Lena Lagendorf. Her new release, Undercover Beast, available on Sing-A-Songwriter Records, widens the ensemble's panoramic approach to groove and improvisation, while keeping faith with the ETO Jazz modal language that shaped their earlier work. We played the title track, Undercover Beast. Thanks for joining me on this episode of The Freedom Principle. My name is Tom Fleming, and I'll be your guide as we explore new releases and reissues from across the African diaspora for this fourth week of October 2025. Our first set drifts south from the Nordic fire into the Mediterranean warmth with Italian producers Coco Thrill with their new release Subtropical on Linfa Records. The track Punta blends laid-back coastal groove with electronic shimmer. Here is Coco Thrill with Punta on The Freedom Principle. Ethiopian-born, San Francisco-based singer and composer Meklit Hadero and her tune Abeba Yahoish, or Bloom My Flower, from her new A Piece of Infinity on Smithsonian Folkways Recordings, a radiant blend of Eto jazz phrasing and poetic folk melody. Prior to that, Turkish psychedelic duo Aje Aje with Horizon from Primordial Soup on Batov Records, a cosmic fusion of Anatolian groove and analog dub textures. And we open the set with the Italian collective Coco Thrill and Punta from their new release Subtropical on Linfa, favoring organic motion, loops that breathe, and bass lines that sway rather than drive. Now we travel to Morocco and Spain with Ala Zuitin, a guitarist and oud player, bridging Andalusian flamenco and North African Ganawa traditions. His new self-titled album, Aficionado, opens with Bulerius de Gitano Moro, the Moorish gypsy's Bulerius, a fiery instrumental rooted in flamenco's most rhythmically intricate form. Here it is on the Freedom Principle.
Thank you. La playa estaba desierta, el mar bañaba tu pie. Cantando con mi guitarra para ti, María Isabel. La playa estaba desierta, el mar bañaba tu piel. Cantando con mi guitarra para ti, María Isabel. Coge tu sombrero y póntelo, vamos a la playa, calienta el sol. Coge tu sombrero y póntelo, vamos a la playa, calienta el sol. Chiripiripi, poropopo, chiripiripi, poropopo, chiripiripi, poropopo, chiripiripi, poropopo. En la arena escribí tu nombre y luego yo lo borré para que nadie pisara tu nombre, María Isabel. En la arena escribí tu nombre, ¡ea! Y luego yo lo borré para que nadie pisara tu nombre, María Isabel. Coge tu sombrero y póntelo, vamos a la playa, calienta el sol. Coge tu sombrero y póntelo, vamos a la playa, calienta el sol. Chiripiripi, poropopo, 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 chiripiripi, poropopo. La luna fue caminando junto a las olas del mar. Tenía celos de tus ojos y tu forma de mirar. ¡Ea! La luna fue caminando junto a las olas del mar. Tenía celos de tus ojos y tu forma de mirar. Coge tu sombrero y póntelo, vamos a la playa, calienta el sol. Coge tu sombrero y póntelo, vamos a la playa, calienta el sol. Chiripiripi, poropopo, chiripiripi, poropopo, chiripiripi, poropopo, chiripiripi, poropopo, chiripiripi, poropopo, chiripiripi, poropopo, chiripiripi, poropopo. Vamos a la playa a calentar el sol.
Picaba en vano el amor a la puerta de la